connections that there are between the Beis HaMikdash and between the Mikdash Ma'at that we have today, between the Beis HaKnesses. And we mentioned that there were many similarities in halacha that the Magen Avraham quoted, that many other Achronim discussed. We spoke about some of those. One very important halacha that is relevant even today is the following. Tosis writes in Maseches Bab Metzia that when we talk about there's an Isser to go onto Har HaBayis, to go into the Beis HaMikdash with money. The Gemara says in Maseches Brachos that you're not allowed to go with money. You're not allowed to bring a wallet there. So Tosis and the other Rishonim and Achronim have a discussion. Does it mean only money in your hand, but money in your pocket is fine, or maybe money in your pocket is not fine and money in your hand is fine? Not clear exactly how to define the Isser, but the Pashtus of the Gemara is you're not allowed to bring money when you go up to the Har HaBayis. So the Mishnah says in Maseches Shkalim, I forgot to put it on here, Hamotzi Moz Behar HaBayis, somebody who finds money. I'm going on to the Har HaBayis for whatever reason, and I come across a few dollars. Says the Gemara, Hare Elu Chulin. I don't have to be concerned that this belongs to the property of Hegdish. I have a right to assume that this belongs to a regular person, and because it's in a Rishus HaRabim, again, if I find money in the middle of Peninsula Boulevard, I don't have to announce it. We assume the person was Miyayish, they gave up hope. So too over here, Hare Elu Chulin, we assume it belongs to you. Whoever found it has the right to keep it. Now, the Ksos HaChoshen has a problem with that because he says, why should I be allowed to keep it? Why should I assume that it belongs to Chulin? Don't we know the Gemara says in Bab Metzia that we learned from two different sources in Chumash that there's such an idea called a Kinyan Chatzer? So we know we have all kinds of transactions that can take place. In this week's Parsha, Parshas Behar, we actually talk about some of those transactions. Ki Simchar Memchar Lamisecha, when you have an item that goes from one person to another. So we're taught about how exactly you're supposed to go about doing the transactions al pi HaTorah. But it's clear, the Gemara proves it, number one, from Gzela, and number two, the Gemara proves it from a get, that one is able to have a kinyan called a kinyan chatzer. So not only does a get have the ability to be given to the hand of the woman, v'nasam biyada, it has to be handed over to her, but it can even be given into her chatzer. That's as if it's an extension of her yad. So that's what the Gemara says. And the Gemara goes so far as to say that Chatzero shel adam konelo afilu shelo midaito. The Gemara says that my chatzer is able to be kona, is able to acquire ownership of something, even if I don't have in mind. So we just had a shaila, take for example, right after Pesach, there was a shaila. I don't remember the last time I discussed a shaila with my father that it took this long to work through. It was an amazing shaila. It was a shaila here from Woodmere that I wasn't asked by the person, but I was asked by Rabbi Axelrod to figure out what the answer was. And I certainly didn't know it on my own, and my father and I spent literally like an entire day working on this shaila. It was very interesting. So it was right after Pesach. Somebody has a monthly subscription to Amazon. I forgot what it's called, but basically it just goes automatically and it charges your credit card. And I think this person, I don't know if they run a daycare center or something, that they have to order a lot of Cheerios, let's say. So they get 20 boxes of Cheerios a month. And it comes every month, the same day of the month. So it was scheduled to come the day after Isru Chag. Did I talk about this a few weeks ago? So it was scheduled to come the day after Isru Chag. So that's fine. Your credit card gets charged. She has Amazon Prime, so it gets charged the day before it goes out to ship. So that wasn't a problem at all. The question was, in the end, the order came 2 days earlier. So it showed up on the last day of Pesach, and they dropped it off at the door, which means the credit card was charged on Shvi Shel Pesach, and now the order actually came to the house on the last day of Pesach. So that was a very complicated shaila. Number one, what do I do about the fact that my credit card was charged over Pesach? Number two, what do I do about the fact that now they dropped off these 10 boxes of Cheerios in my house? And to make things even worse, so you'll say, maybe you're Kona Bekinin Chatzer, right? Because we know Chatzer Rishol Adam is Kona Lo. We know that a Chatzer can serve as an extension of my hand, so that's a problem, should be a problem of that I'm not allowed to have the chametz in my possession on Pesach. So you'll say, well, it's outside, and normally chatzera shel adam konelo shelo midaito. My chatzer is able to be kona even without my knowing. However, the Tosis writes, the chatzer cannot be kona balkarchi. The chatzer can't be kona when I don't want the chatzer to be kona. Same way, if someone shoves something into my hand, someone shoves a illegal item into my hand, and then the policeman comes and says, what are you holding in your hand? I say, this person just came over me and threw it into my hand. You're not Kona that. You're not the one responsible for that. You can prove that it was someone else who shoved it into your hand. So too over here, we're told that Chatzer Rishon cannot be Kona, it's Bal Karcho. So over here, I don't want to be Kona it. I don't want to be Kona the Chametz. I don't want it in my Chatzer, so maybe you'll say I'm safe. Problem was, the woman decided that she didn't want it to get ruined outside, so she took it into the house and left it in the garage. So this was a very complicated shayla. Rabbi Axelrod called Matzah Yantif. He called Reb David Cohn, because he has very late hours that you're able to call him, and Reb David Cohn said, I'm not touching this with a 10-foot pole, it's too complicated. So he didn't get involved, and I was wondering, Reb David Cohn said it's too complicated, how complicated could it be? How silly I am that the next day I went with my father and we were discussing, it literally took 7 hours to discuss the shaila and figure out what the parameters are and what the heter was and whether or not it's mutter at all. So that was a complicated shaila, but a lot of it has to do with kinyan chatzar. Should we assume that my chatzar is able to be kona? And what are the parameters? When can my chatzar be kona? And when possibly can it not? So the Gemara says in Baba Basra Ayin Tes. Just think about that for a minute and then we'll come back to this idea. The Gemara says in Baba Basra Daf Ayin Tes. Higdish bar. A person is able to be makdish anything. So I can take this shtender if it belongs to me. It doesn't, but if I have any property in my house, I can say, I want this chair to belong to Higdish, I want this table, I want this car, and then Higdish has it in their property. Either they'll sell it to someone else and take the proceeds and give it for some purpose of Higdish, or whatever they'll do with it. Maybe they'll use my car for driving around whatever they need to drive around, so now it belongs to Higdish. So the Gemara says, what happens? You have somebody who owns a whole large piece of property. So I say, this pit that is my property, I want that to belong to Higdish. What's Higdish going to do with it? Whatever they want to do with it. Maybe they'll open a bathhouse and they'll start charging rent and then they'll take the money. Whatever they want to do. So the Gemara says, if I give them an empty pit, and now it's nismala mayim, now water comes into the pit, so the Gemara says, if somebody comes later on and takes from that water for their own purposes, that's not considered to be a violation of me'ila. If somebody goes ahead and fills up the pit for their own purposes and uses it for some purpose of their own, that's a violation of me'ila. But if the pit fills up with water on its own, and then I come and use that water, so I have not violated the prohibition of me'ila. The Gemara doesn't explain why. That's what the Gemara says. So Tosis asks the Kasha, why? Why shouldn't it be that Bikinyan Chatzer, Hekdish should be Kona the water? You're right. All I gave to Hekdish was the pit itself, but now the pit got filled up, so it should be the same as a husband who goes to his wife and puts the get in the chatzer. The wife is kona; it's an extension of her yad. So the same should be over here. When Hekdish owns a pit, and the pit now gets filled up, we should say that Hekdish is now not only in ownership of the pit itself, of the property, but Hekdish also owns all the contents of the property as well, all the water that's inside of this pit. So that's the kasha that Tosis has. Tosis answers the kasha and he says, Ein yad lehekdish. There's no such thing. Hekdish doesn't have a hand, so Hekdish also can't have an extension of a hand. That's the answer Tosis gives, that there's no such thing as a kinyan chatzer when it comes to Hekdish. That's the way Tosis answers the kasha. And with this, the Magen Avraham quotes his lahalach and he says, the Gemara says in Bab Metzia Daf Chaf Alef, Hamotzi Mos Bebate Knesios Bebate Medrashos. This is the connection to the Beis HaMikdash and Beis HaKnesses. Before we said, if I find money on the Har HaBayis, we say you're allowed to keep it, it doesn't become Hekdish. What do you mean? Why are you allowed to keep it? Why shouldn't you say that it becomes the property of Hekdish by the fact that it's in the property of Hekdish, in the Chatzer? The answer is no. Because Tosis writes, there's no such thing as a Kinyan Chatzer for Hekdish because the whole idea of how a kinyan chatzer works is that it's like an extension of my hand. But Hekdish doesn't have a hand. Hekdish is an entity. Hekdish is not a person. So therefore we assume that Hekdish cannot have the ability to acquire ownership of any item by the fact that the item is found in that possession. So the Magen Avraham writes, in explaining the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Hamotzei Moz Bebate Knesios Bebate Medrashos. What if I'm walking out of shul one day and I find a dollar bill on the floor? So normally what most of us do is we put it in the tzedakah box, because we know probably somebody dropped it while they were trying to put it into the pushka. What happens if you find a $100 bill? What happens if you find a few $100 bills? And you have no reason to assume that the person's going to come back to claim it. I don't know what that assumption is, but whatever it might be. You find something that there's no reason to assume the person's going to come back and there's no identifying characteristics about what it is or how it is. You find $100 bills all over the room. So should you assume that it belongs to the shul? Or should you assume that finders keepers, it belongs to me? So what would he say? So here says the Magen Avraham, we pattern this halacha off of the halacha that we find by the Beis HaMikdash. And the same way by the Beis HaMikdash we're told that if somebody finds money in the perimeter of the Har HaBayis or in the Beis HaMikdash itself, they're allowed to keep it. It doesn't belong to Hekdish and there's no such thing as a Kinyan Chatzer. So to over here the Gemara says that when you have a situation where somebody finds money in a shul and you have no reason to assume that the person is going to be able to identify the money and get it back, you're allowed to keep it on your own. And you don't assume that it automatically becomes the property of Hekdish, even though it's found in the property of Hekdish, even though it's found in the chatzar. It should work just like any other time a kinyan chatzar works. So that's what the Magen Avraham writes. And he assumes that this is similar to the story by a Beis HaMikdash, that the same way the Beis HaMikdash has no chatzer mechanism of being kona, so to the Beis HaKnesses nowadays also has no mechanism of being kona. The problem is that the Ramban very strongly opposes the view of the Balei HaTosfos. The Ramban writes in Baba Basra that, what do you mean? The same way that a chatzer can acquire ownership of something for anybody, so too an entity can also acquire ownership via a chatzer. Why should you assume it should be any different? So once you have that Ramban, you have to go and explain a whole lot of things. Why should it be that if I find money in Har HaBayis, it shouldn't belong to me? I mean, it should belong to me. Why doesn't it automatically go to Hektish? Why is it that when you come to a Beis HaKnesses and you find money on the floor, why should you be allowed to keep it? Doesn't make any sense. So this is a very problematic issue. If you assume that the Ramban is correct, that there is such a mechanism as even an entity, even a corporation like Hektish or a Beis HaKnesses, having an acquired ownership via a chatzer, if that's true, how do you explain why it is when I come into a shul and I find money, I'm allowed to keep it? Why should that be the case? So Rav Shlomo Zalman, what? No, so that's minat Torah. Chatzer is kind of minat Torah. And the Gemara says, since we find it in two different places, we find it by kinyan gneva, and we find it by kinyan for a get, since we find it by two different places, we assume it's kona all the time. Chatzer is kona for everything. So that's the assumption that the Ramban has, that chatzin could be kona for hefker also, I'm sorry, for hagdish, and for Beis HaKnesses, for a corporation. If that's true, how do you explain why it is that if I find money on the Har HaBayis, it belongs to me, not to hagdish? Why should it be the case that if I find money in a shul, it should belong to me and not to the shul? So that's the question that we have to deal with. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes, maybe the answer is there's another condition in order for a chatzer to be able to be kona. He says a chatzer has to be what we call a chatzer hamishtameres. That means my chatzer has to be somewhat gated in. My chatzer, in order for it to acquire ownership for me, has to be somewhat private. Otherwise, anyone can come into my lawn, they see a diamond ring on the lawn, I'm not kona because anyone can come 2 minutes later and take it away. The only time I'm kona is when it's mishtameres in some way, when it's going to be guarded, and it's not going to somehow float out of my chatzer. So too over here. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach argues that nowadays when we have a Beis HaKnesses and people are coming and going all the time and the Beis HaKnesses is open all the time, you assume that's not a chatzer hamishtamera. So even though the dollar may have been found in the property of the Beis HaKnesses, that's not a reason to assume that it should belong to the Beis HaKnesses. It still belongs to whoever finds it because Beis HaKnesses cannot acquire ownership when we have a situation where the chatzer is not mishtamera. So take for a practical example, one of the very recent Achronim writes in a tshuva that there was a story in Eretz Yisrael that went to court, actually. Somebody came into a bank, and they found a wad of $100 bills on the floor. It was clear somebody obviously just made a deposit and dropped it on the floor before they walked out. So he hung up signs, and he took out ads in the paper. He said, look, there was an identifying characteristic. It was in a white envelope. So he was a very honest-to-goodness citizen, so he went to the police station, and he told them, can you please announce that I found this very large amount of money, and I don't know whose it is, and there's an identifying characteristic about the fact that it has a white envelope, but it could have been anybody. How am I supposed to know? So he hangs up signs, gives it to the police. A few weeks later, the police called him back that nobody's claiming it. Nobody has come forth and said that it was theirs. Nobody put out a claim that they lost it. So they said, you have a right to keep it. So the bank, which was a religious bank in Eretz Yisrael, took the guy to a din Torah. They said, what do you mean? We were calling him din chatzer. We were calling him din chatzer. Only in Eretz Yisrael they can have such a din Torah. So the guy claims, what are you talking about? I could have walked out on my own, taken the money, you would have never known about it. They said, what does that have a difference? Right now, when it was on the floor in our property, even though it was in a white envelope, it was in our property. Once it's in our premises, then we have every right to assume. The same way the woman is kona the get, so too we're kona the money because it was in our premises. So we're kona midin chatzer. So the taina back was, no, the Bezdan, I think, paskin, if I'm not mistaken, that, no, you're not kona midin chatzer. That's a chatzer shein mishtameres. People are walking in and out of the bank all day long. And you have people coming and going, taking money out, putting money in. So how can you say that it was guarded by the bank itself? It's not true. The first person who walked in and saw the envelope didn't go and give it back to the bank. They went and took it for themselves. So that's why there was this discussion about whether or not the bank should be kona midin chatzer. I don't want to try and say that the bank is the same as a shul, but in some way it is. That the same way that a shul is a chatzer shein mishtameres, and that's why perhaps you're not able to say that the shul acquires the ownership of the money that's found on the floor, so too the bank, that is a chatzer shein mishtameres, people coming and going all the time, and it's not a private entity at all, it's something that is open to the public, we assume that in such a case a chatzer cannot be used, that mechanism would not work. Yeah?
Not allowed to have any money in Har HaBayis.
So that's the question. That's why I started. Tosis has a discussion with the other Rishonim. What does it mean you're not allowed to have money on Har HaBayis? Does it mean you're not allowed to have any money? What if I come to Har HaBayis? There was a special place on Har HaBayis where I was able to buy karbanos. So I come, I did terrible averus, I have to go bring a karban chatas. I don't have cows lying around my property. So I come to Yerushalayim, I assume there's going to be some cows roaming around the Har HaBayis that I can buy. Some cows up for sale, I assume. Right? I assume not everybody comes to Yerushalayim with their own cows from Tiberia. Not everybody lives in Yerushalayim. So I'm the poor guy who does Mechal Shabbos out in Tzvat. So I have to travel all the way from Tzvat with my cow in order to go ahead and perform the mitzvah? No. When I get to Yerushalayim, I'll buy the cow that I want. So people had money there. People obviously had money. The question is, where did they keep the money when they went to go visit the Beis HaMikdash? So that's what Tosis has a discussion. Maybe it means they put it in their pocket, meaning it could be that there was money somewhere. Could be that there was money somewhere. Their question is, whose money is it? Does it belong to Hekdesh? Or should we assume that it belongs to a private person and Hekdesh does not require ownership, does not acquire ownership, just because this is found on their premises? So we've spoken a little bit about the similarities between a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMikdash, and the fact that it's a Mikdash Ma'at sometimes means that the rules change a little bit, as we'll see. But let's first talk about a very fundamental question, and that is, what endows a Beis HaKnesses or a Beis HaMikdash with its sanctity in the first place? Who said that a Beis HaKnesses is a Makom Kadosh? Who said that a Beis HaMikdash has any level, any status of sanctity of Kedusha at all? And if it does, where does that come from? Is it because we do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash? Is it because we come and we daven in a shul? Is that what gives it Kedusha? So if I go ahead and I daven in somebody's basement, does that also give it a status of a Beis HaKnesses? Is it just the mitzvah alone that we're performing that endows the place with Kedusha? The answer is no. The Nefesh HaChaim, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, explains, what is the source of Kedusha? And this applies to a Beis HaKnesses, it applies to a Beis HaMikdash, it applies to everything. So let's learn together a beautiful piece that my father wrote over from Rav Soloveitchik. So, the story goes like this. Mavur b'Megillah. The Gemara has a Megillah daf Chavav. Sheyesh hevdel bein tashmishei mitzvah lebein tashmishei kedusha. There are two separate categories. One is a category that we refer to as tashmishei kedusha, and one is what we refer to as tashmishei mitzvah. What is the difference? Tashmishei mitzvah means when you have mitzvah items and you're finished using them, the Gemara says, nizrakin, you can dispose of them. You don't have to put them in the Shemus. However, Tashmishei Kedusha, when I have something that's a different category of mitzvah item, when you're done with that, you have to put it into the Shemus. Now, what is on the list of Tashmishei Kedusha that needs to go into Shemus? And what is on the list of Tashmishei Mitzvah that I can simply dispose of? Says the Gemara, Be'elu ein Tashmishei Mitzvah. Sukkah. If I have panels from a sukkah that get ruined, do I have to go put them in the Shemus? No, I can go and dispose of them. No reason to do anything else. Lulav, after Sukkot is over, I can dispose of the lulav. Shofar or tzitzis. Elu ein tashmishei kedusha. What is on the second category that needs to go in the Shemus after you're finished using it? Deluskimi or svarim, tfilin umezuzah, which means you have a sefer Torah, or you have the parchment that was written psukim on it, or you have a sefer, or you have tfilin, or a mezuzah. All of those need to go into the Shemus. Seder of Soloveitchik as follows, based on Rav Chaim Volozhiner. How do you determine which mitzvah item goes in which list? How do I know which one belongs in the list that can just be disposed of? How do I know which one belongs in the list that you need to put in Shemus? So he explained as follows. Begeder ahevdel shebein tashmishei mitzvah levein tashmishei kedusha. How do I categorize? How do I clearly delineate which one belongs in which category? Bir b'sefer nefesh hachaim. Rav Chaim Volozhiner explains as follows. The yisod kalin yane kedusha hi kedusha satorah. What endows any item in this world with Kedusha is the Torah. There's nothing else that Kedusha can stem from. It's only able to come from the Torah itself. V'hainu taima, and this is the reason why, Sefer Torah u'tfilin u'mezuzah. This is why, when you have a Sefer Torah that is no longer used, or a pair of tefillin that gets worn out, or you have a mezuzah, u'mesham she'em, and all of those items which are used along with the Sefer Torah, the tefillin or the mezuzah, those are all considered to be Kodesh. Why? Shebekulam yesh behem kedushas ksav shel Torah. Because all of those have Divrei Torah. They all have psukim on them. And that's what endows something with Kedusha. O shehem ishamshim l'ksav shel Torah. Either they have psukim on them themselves, either a Sefer Torah, Tefillah, Mezuzah, or they are being used to house the Sefer Torah, Tefillah, Mezuzah. So when you have a mantle for the Sefer Torah, or the Tefillin Zekel, the Tefillin case, or the cover for the Mezuzah, All of those are considered to be something that needs to go into Seamus because either it is the Kedusha itself or it is something that houses something which is Kodesh. Alva b'suka, however, when it comes to the item like a sukkah or lulav or shofar or tzitzis, a shofar doesn't have any psukim on it, a tzitzis doesn't have any psukim on it, a sukkah doesn't have any psukim on it, and therefore we assume, since they don't have any kedushas hatorah, therefore, dinam kiteshmishe mitzvah. While you're doing the mitzvah with them, you have to treat them in a certain way. But once the mitzvah is completed, once you're not using them anymore, you can simply dispose of them, and that is good enough. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik explained, based on Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Ulefi hagdarazu. And according to this, said Rav Soloveitchik, you can take it a little bit further. Sarach lahavin. My time is kedusha beis hamigdash ola beis hakneses. What endows a beis hakneses or a beis hamigdash with kedusha? Is it simply the avoda that we do there? Is it simply the fact that we daven in a shul? Shamati vazeh mikvod rabbeinu hagrit Soloveitchik. The ikar shel hamishkan. The whole main focus of the mishkan. What endows the entire edifice with the kedusha that it has is ha'aronim haluchos, was the fact that we have housed in the Beis HaMikdash in Aron with the luchos. Va'asher al-kein, and therefore, hu dinikra mishkan ha'edus. Therefore, it is called the mishkan ha'edus. What is ha'edus? Al-shem luchos ha'edus. The whole mishkan was named after the luchos which were housed in the mishkan, because that was the most central focus of this entire building, of the whole structure. That's why we named the place after the luchos. Va'af be'beis hamigdash kachaya. So too, what endowed the beis hamigdash later on with kedusha was the aron with the luchos. U'beis hamigdash b'li luchos ena beis hamigdash. When you have a beis hamigdash without the luchos, that has no kedusha. So you'll ask, what? Ba'yisheni. The Gemara tells us that in the Ba'yisheni there was no aron and the luchos. So what are you telling me? The Bayi Sheni had no Kedusha at all? I can just come into the Beis HaMikdash and the Bayi Sheni and do whatever I want because there's no Kedusha to the place? Oh! After the Bayi Sheni hayachaser ha'aronim haluchos, even on the Bayi Sheni, the Gemara tells us there was no Aron and there were no luchos. Aye, so was there a status of Kedusha at all to the Bayi Sheni if there were no luchos? Says Rav Soloveitchik as follows, Ayin Rambam, the Rambam writes in Beis HaBechira Shekasab, when Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beis HaMikdash and he knows that there's going to come a time when it will be destroyed, he built a place underground, right under the space of the Kodesh HaKadashim, where they would hide the Aron and the Luchos. So in a sense, even on the Bayis Sheni, the Aron and the Luchos were not visible, but they still were the focus and the source of Kedusha for the Bayis Sheni. That's what he argues. Because after all, my father always says, Rav Soloveitchik said, why does the Rambam tell us that? What is the Rambam, a history book? He tells us that Shlomo HaMelech built a place underground where they could hide the Aron and the Luchos. Who cares what Shlomo HaMelech did? Why is that relevant to us? The answer is it's very relevant. Because otherwise, how was there any Kedusha in the Bayis Sheni? How do we understand that? And why should there be any Kedusha there now? The whole Beis HaMikdash that was there had no Kedusha at all, so it shouldn't linger on today at all. The answer is no. The Rambam is not just telling us the historical fact. The Rambam is telling us a very important halachic nafkamina, that because Shlomo HaMelech had the foresight to build a place underground which was going to house the Aron and the Luchos, that is the reason why the Bayis Sheni had a Kedusha in the first place. And because of that, that Kedusha is Kidsha Liyasid Lavo. That Kedusha is what lasted forever, and that's why we still consider that place to be a Makom Kadosh. Skip down a little bit. V'chein Mashma Midivrei HaRambam. And now he says, this is what the Rambam writes. Why does a Beis HaKnesses have a status of Kedusha? Why is a Beis HaKnesses considered to be holy? Not because we daven here. That's not enough to make a place holy. The reason why a Beis HaKnesses is holy is simply because the Beis HaKnesses has a Sefer Torah. Like the Rambam says in Hilchos Tefillah, Beis HaKnesses she'ein bo aronim sefer Torah, i'efshur she'tia lo kedushas Beis HaKnesses. Rav Soloveitchik understood in the Rambam that any Beis HaKnesses that doesn't have a sefer Torah has no elevated status of a Beis HaKnesses at all. Aye, we daven here every week. Aye, we have a basement minion in the house. Doesn't matter. If you don't have a sefer Torah, you cannot call this place a makom kadosh. This is one of the reasons Rav Soloveitchik was very opposed to minyanim in the house, besides for the fact that it's a blatant violation of Barov HaMadras Melech and all the other problems with it, and besides for the fact that so often shilas come up and there's no one in the room that knows how to answer them, besides for all of that, there's a problem that you're davening in a place which doesn't have a status of a Beis HaKnesses. So how are you giving up? The Gemara says that if you daven in a place which has the status of a Beis HaKnesses, you have a special schus, your tefillah is going to be answered. So why would you give up that opportunity to daven in a Makom Kaddish of a Beis HaKnesses to daven in someone's basement? Again, if it's raining outside and you're not going to go to shul, so it's a different story. But if you have as easily an opportunity to go to shul, and you just choose not to because it's more convenient to go to the Beis HaKnesses, or the so-called Beis HaKnesses in my friend's basement, that's something that you might be giving up on. If it doesn't have a Sefer Torah, then it might not have a Kedushas Beis HaKnesses at all, and it's something to very seriously consider and very seriously think about. So this was what Rav Soloveitchik argued of the source of Kedusha for a Beis HaKnesses, and for that matter, the source of Kedusha for a Beis HaMikdash as well. He then took it a step further and said, this is the source of Kedusha for Eretz Yisrael as well. That when they came and conquered Eretz Yisrael, they walked around with the Aron and the Luchos. Why did Yehoshua ben Nun have to take the Aron and the Luchos? Soloveitchik argued the reason perhaps is because how can you endow a whole country with Kedusha? Just because we do mitzvahs in it? The answer is no. What gives the Kedusha to Eretz Yisrael is the fact that when Yehoshua ben Nun conquered the land, he walks around with the Aron and the Sefer Torah, with the Luchos, and that's what endowed the whole land with the Kedusha on its own. So that's something you can read on your own on the bottom of the page. I brought the rest of the piece from Rav Soloveitchik. There's a lot more to say about it, but that's the basic gist of his chiddush. So now let's move. Yeah.
Is the kedusha of Har HaBayis today based on the fact that the Aron and Luchos are somewhere?
So that's an interesting question. The kedusha of the Bayis Sheni, the way it was endowed with the kedusha, is because of the Aron and Luchos. Then there's a disagreement, like we spoke a few weeks ago, between the Rambam and the Ravid and other Rishonim about, should we assume that once the Kedusha was endowed on the Har HaBayis and the Beis HaMikdash by the fact that there was a Bayis Sheni, should we say that that's Kidsha Liyasadlava, that Kedusha lingers on even after the Beis HaMikdash is no longer there? Or do you say, no, once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, there's no longer any Kedusha there at all? So that's the discussion that the Rishonim have. Once we assume that it was endowed with Kedusha, the Magen Avraham and most Achronim assume, like the Rambam, that Kidsha the Yasadabo, that Kedusha is something that is everlasting. It's enduring and it's something that never went away even after the Churban Beis HaMikdash took place. Yeah?
What are the limitations on how can you grant the shul that's no longer in use? Once you take out the Sefer Torah, the Kedusha is no longer.
It's an interesting question. Meaning, once you take out the Sefer Torah, does it lose its status of a Beis HaKnesses? And now am I allowed to treat it like any other room in my house? Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm. Itself has certain rules or guidelines.
No, but the shul was endowed with Kedusha because it housed the Sefer Torah for so long.
It's not there anymore, right? It's only based on the Sefer Kedusha there.
I don't know. I would have said the same way that the Aron and the Luchos endowed the Beis HaMikdash with Kedusha, and that Kedusha stayed. So maybe also the shul also, once the Sefer Torah is placed into the shul, it endows the makom with Kedusha. I'm not sure 100%, but maybe it's a parallel. Maybe it's the same. I don't know exactly. What?
You take the Sefer Torah out of the norm. Let's say you have a closet.
Yeah.
That closet still maintains, you can't just put anything into that closet.
Right. That's considered a shtamshus. That's something that is mishamesh, the Sefer Torah, and therefore it takes on a quasi-status of a Sefer Torah. They actually had the Shaila in Halb, because after Hurricane Sandy, I think the old Halb building in Long Beach, I think a lot of the shul component of the building was destroyed. I don't know exactly the layout there, but I think that's what I was told. Am I wrong? So that's what I was told. So then they had to make a makeshift, they had to rebuild the shul after. They didn't want to spend a lot of money, because they knew at some point they were going to move over here. So they made like a makeshift Aron. So it was like the janitors in the school put together a bunch of plywood. It didn't look very attractive. They put together a bunch of wood, and then they had cubbies on either side that housed the tefillin of the boys who were bar mitzvah. So the question was, now that they moved and they sold the building, what do they do with that portion of the room? So they called up a bunch of shuls and asked them, would you want to come and take the aron to your shul? Let's say there's a shul that can't afford it. So the shuls came to check it out, and nobody was interested because it didn't really look very nice. It was just made by the custodians and help. So the question was, what do they do with it now? Can they just take it apart and dispose of it? What do they do with it? Do they have to bury all those slats? And if they do, how far does the Aron Kodesh go? Does it mean it includes, since the whole thing is one wooden structure, it includes, the Aron Kodesh officially includes all of those little cubbies that house the tefillin also? Or does it only mean the part of the Aron Kodesh that housed the Sefer Torah itself? This was a shaila that I discussed with my father also about how exactly do we figure out what to do when you have an Aron that's in a condition that it can't be used anymore? Or, for example, it happened last year. There was a shul that was cleaning out their basement, and it turned out they had like 10 Aron Kodeshes from all those. It was a shul that was no longer being used, and they were going to sell it to another shul, but the basement was just full of junk from the last 50 years that it wasn't being used. And they had a big buildup of old Aron Kodeshes that just ended up there. I'm not sure how they ended up there. I don't know what the history was, but they wanted to know, what do we do with them? No shul's going to want such an Aron Kodesh, a portable Aron Kodesh that's not even so nice. So what do you do with such a thing? Can you just give it away? So they actually put it up on some list, and they asked if anyone wants these Aron Kodeshes. So there was a Christian organization that wrote back to them that they have a class that they offer in their church, which was a, what do you call it, wood carving class. They teach them how to make pews for the churches, and they teach them how to make beautiful engravings. So they said, this is free wood, we may as well come and pick it up to use it. So I said, even if you don't want to say that you have to actually bury them, you're going to give them to the church to teach them how to teach their students how to go ahead and carve out the beautiful engravings for their pews in their sanctuary. It's probably not such a good idea. So we found out another idea of what to do with them, but it's a very important shaila. So anyway, a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMikdash certainly have a very special level of Kedusha. Where that Kedusha comes from, we assume, is from the Kedushas HaTorah. In the Beis HaMikdash, it was from the Aron and the Luchos, and here in the Beis HaKnesses, it's from the fact that we have a Aron with the Sefer Torah. We mentioned in the previous weeks that there are some similarities between the laws of a Beis HaMikdash and the laws of a Beis HaKnesses. But one will notice when you look at the two Gemaras and you contrast the halachos that there are also some major differences between the laws that govern a Beis HaKnesses and the laws that govern a Beis HaMikdash. And that goes as follows. Let's look at the Gemara in Brachos. This is number Beis on the second side of the sheet. Ezehu Mora. We know that we have a din of Mora HaMikdash. You have to act in a certain way when you visit the Beis HaMikdash. So says the Gemara, what are the rules that govern our behavior when we visit the Beis HaMikdash? How am I supposed to know how one is supposed to act when they come to the Makom Kadosh, to the Beis HaMikdash? Says the Gemara, number one, Le'ikanes la'arabayis b'maklo. You're not allowed to come with your stick. So the Achronim have a discussion. What does it mean you're not allowed to come with your stick? What if I'm a Chassidish Rebbe and I have a golden stick? I'm not planning on being one anytime soon, but if I were, so maybe I would have a silver one. So is that what the Gemara means? Does the Gemara just mean a stick that's all dirty, that's dusty from the walking, or it means even, no, a fancy cane that you walk with, mishum kavod? So some say maybe that's better, maybe that's worse. Some say, when I'm going in God's palace and I'm showing off, like I'm the big Hasidish Rebbe who's walking around with a fancy cane, who do you think you are? You're in God's house, you don't show off anything. Ain't godless lefnei amakom. Nobody cares about your titles here. Nobody cares who you are. You walked into the Beis HaMikdash, all the titles go away. So the Menchas Chinuch quotes in the Mavre Yabuk, and when a person offers a tefillah, Menchas Chinuch says, and this is quoted also in Rabbi Kiva Eger and Shulchan Aruch, when a person offers a tefillah for a chola, so let's say you have somebody who's sick, and the person happens to be Rabbi Yashiv, right? So what do you normally say in the tefillah? Most people say, I want that you should have a refuah shleima for Harav Yosef Shalom Ben, I think her name was Chaya Musha or something like that, from when he was ill, I don't remember. So you say this and this and that, that's what you say, and you add the title. So the Menchas Chinuch says, no, you shouldn't do that. It's improper. When you're talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam, what are you calling this person Harab? You think in God's eyes he's so special? You think God says, you're talking about someone very holy. Oh, now we're going to give him a refuah shleima. No, everybody's equal footing. In God's eyes, we're all as pashut as everybody else's. And therefore, when you offer a tefillah, the Menchas Chinuch says, you don't say any titles, no superlatives. You just say, you want a refuah shleima for Ploni ben Plonis. It doesn't matter if it's your father, it doesn't matter if it's your mother. You should just say what the person's name is. You don't add any titles at all. And this goes as well, my father told me, for he always thinks it's improper when we do a kelmale, and the person says sometimes, for Harav this, or you know, you say some kind of title for the person as you're saying the kelmale. So my father thinks it's not proper either. You should just say the person's name, because Ein Gavus Lefnei HaMakom, when we offer a tefillah, it's not appropriate to add in any titles, because as far as God is concerned, everybody's equal. Everybody's a nobody, where everybody's a somebody. So therefore we should assume that there's no reason to add any titles when we offer a tefillah at all. So anyway, the Gemara says here, Le'ikanes la'arabayis b'makla. When a person visits the Beis HaMikdash, rule number one is you're not allowed to go with your stick. If you're a Chassidish Rebbe, you have to ask the Shaila. The Shavus Yaakov talked about it. B'min alo, you're not allowed to go with shoes. B'afendasa, with your belt. U'va'abak shal raglov, you have to clean off your feet. U'va'maz, that's rule number sadina, you can't go in with a wallet. Veloya sena kapandarya, and you're not allowed to make it a shortcut. So if you want to get from one side of the Har HaBayis to the other, you can't walk through the Har HaBayis, you have to walk all the way around. Those are the rules that govern the conduct of a person when they visit the Har HaBayis, the Beis HaMikdash. So what would you say by a shul? Should be the same. Why should it be the same? After all, a shul is a mikdash ma'at. So we should say, you have to take your shoes off when you come to the shul. You make sure not to have your stick when you come to the shul. You have to make sure that everything else should also apply to the shul. So we shouldn't be allowed to take our wallets. We should certainly not be allowed to take our cell phones for many reasons. But why don't we say that the rules that govern the Beis HaMikdash should also govern the Beis HaKnesses? Says the Gemara in Brachas Daf Samach Gimel Amar Rabba, what are the rules that govern the behavior that a person is supposed to act with when they come to a Beis HaKnesses? Ki Beiso. The rules are however you would act in your own home is the way you act in a shul. Which means, Ma Beiso HaKapandaria Kapadinish, just like in my house, I don't want people coming through my house if they have to get from one side of the street to the other. I wouldn't appreciate it if they came and walked through my backyard or they came and walked through my living room. So too in a shul, you're not allowed to say, if I want to get from this side of peninsula to the other side, you can't say that I want to do that and therefore I have a right to walk through the shul, because that's a conduct I would not accept if someone did it in my own house. Secondly, the Gemara says, Arakiko umina lo kapadinish. It used to be they had dirt floors, so I didn't mind if someone spit on the floor. They would just rub it right into the floor. So too in a shul, you're allowed to spit on the floor in a shul because they used to have the dirt floors. And the same thing goes with shoes. Somebody walks into my house with shoes. I don't tell them immediately, take the shoes off. So therefore, when you come to shul, you don't have to take the shoes off either. So that's what the Gemara says. The rules that govern the conduct of a Beis HaKnesses are the same way a person would act in their own home. That's what the Gemara says. And the question is, why should that be true? Why shouldn't you say that the same way that a Beis HaMikdash has certain rules, so a Mikdash Ma'at should follow the same rules as a Beis HaMikdash itself? If it's patterned in many ways, like we said, off of the main Beis HaMikdash, and in many areas of halacha we say it is the same, it's paralleled off those halachos, so why should we say that the conduct should be any different? How do you explain that? So Rav Soloveitchik explained as follows. He said, because there's a major distinction between a Beis HaMikdash and a Beis HaKnesses. A Beis HaMikdash is what we call the Beis HaShem. What does the pasuk say? Ki Beisi Beis Tfila Yikari Lechal Ha'amim. The Ribbono Shel Olam refers to his house as Beisi Beis Tfila. This is my house, Yikari Lechal Ha'amim. Everyone's welcome to join, all nations of the world. My house, my palace. And so too we say, Shifti Beis HaShem Kol Yimei Chayai. I want to be able to visit the house of the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Beis HaMikdash. That is called the Beis HaShem. When we have the opportunity to do Aliyah LeRegel, we are going to visit the Armona Shel HaMelech, the palace of the king. However, the Beis HaKnesses, said Rav Soloveitchik, is what we call the Bayis Shel HaTzibur. That is our home. This is our place, and the Ribbono Shel Olam decides that he's going to visit us. Like the Gemara says in Brachos. Gemara says, Kivin Sheba HaKadosh Baruch Hu HaKnesses, when the Ribbono Shel Olam comes to visit the shul, and he sees there's no minion there, he says, Madua basi ve'en ish. How come I've come to visit your house and there's no one there to greet me? Is that respectful? You invite someone to come be your guest and then you don't show up. The guy comes on time, he's there with all of his suitcases and you're not there to greet them. What kind of host are you? So that's why the Ribbono Shel Olam has a claim. When he comes to visit our home and davening's called for 7:30 and he's there on time, where are you? Madua basi ve'en ish. I've come to visit your house and you're not even there. So that's why there's a major difference between a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMikdash. And this is why we call a Beis HaKnesses a Mikdash Ma'at. It's not the same as God's palace. This is only a quasi Beis HaMikdash because we don't have the full experience. We don't get to visit the President in the White House. President comes to us, it's a tremendous honor, but after all, he's coming to our home, we're not going to visit his home. So based on that assumption, Rav Soloveitchik explained why the rules are governed very differently between the conduct in a Beis HaMikdash and the conduct and the mode of activity in a Beis HaKnesses. When it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, you're coming to the Ribbono Shel Olam's house. That's a Makom Kadosh. That's a place that is extremely holy. You better take your shoes off to show how holy it is. You can't just walk around with your money, do all the mundane activities you would otherwise do. This is the palace of the king. And therefore we assume there's a certain mode of conduct that you have to keep to when you're in the Beis HaMikdash. When you come to the Beis HaKnesses, what governs the conduct in a Beis HaKnesses, says the Gemara, Ki Beis. How a distinguished person would act in their own home. Because after all, this is our home. After all, this is our home, and the Ribbono Shel Olam comes to visit us in our home every time we come together to daven. That is the distinction between a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMikdash. And in fact, the Mishneh Berurah writes, the Gemara says in a Beis HaKnesses, you're allowed to spit on the floor. Why? Because nobody cares if at home somebody walks into their house and spits on the floor. After all, he says, they used to have dirt floors, so there was nothing wrong at all with spitting on the floor. That's why you can do it in a Beis HaKnesses. Says the Mishneh Berurah, Osam Anashim HaShirim, those wealthy people who have the fancy floors and would never allow someone to walk into their house and spit on the floor. So for them, it's prohibited for them to spit on the floor in the shul also. Because the rules that dictate the way we act in a Beis HaKnesses are however we would expect somebody to act in our own home. And if I have a fancy house and I would never allow someone to spit on the floor of my house, so too, nowadays when we have carpet on the floors, we wouldn't allow anyone to spit on the floor either in shul. Because that governs our behavior in the Beis HaKnesses. Or for example, said of Soloveitchik, when you wear boots outside and it's snowing, you would never allow someone to walk into your house with their boots and trot around your whole house. They're going to ruin the carpets. So he, Rav Soloveitchik, argued, you don't have a heter to walk into a shul with boots today either. You have to bring a second pair of shoes to change in the lobby. Why? Because the same way I would never allow someone to walk into my house and ruin the carpets by walking around with their boots, so too you're not allowed to walk into a shul. Those are the rules that dictate my behavior at home are the same that are going to dictate the rules of behavior in the shul. Rav Soloveitchik added, perhaps jokingly, from Rav Chaim, from his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, that maybe this is the understanding of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos there were 10 miracles that happened every day in the Beis HaMikdash, every year. So one of them was, Omdim Tzvufim, they would stand up very tightly, packed one against the other, there was no room to move at all. Umishtachavim Revachim, somehow when it came time to do the Hishtachavaya on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, all of a sudden there was plenty of room for everyone to be totally spread out on the floor. How'd that happen? So the Mishnah says that was one of the miracles in the Beis HaMikdash. If you hear from Marav, Marav is in the main shul at 10 o'clock. So the Mishnah says that that was a miracle. So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said, I understand the miracle that Mishtachavim Revachim, there was plenty of room to bow down openly and nobody got crushed when they bowed down. But why does the Mishnah have to say part of the miracle was Omdim Tzvufim? Part of the miracle was that they stood tightly next to each other? That's not a miracle. When you have a crowded room, people stand next to each other. What's the miracle? So if Soloveitchik said the miracle was not like today, where you come into shul and everyone's walking around like this, and they take a little walk over here, and I'm walking around with my sitter, and I'm seeing what he's doing, what she's doing, what someone else is doing. So if Soloveitchik, is that a way to act in a shul? How would you like it if someone walked into your house? They just come to visit your house to have a Shabbos meal in your house, and instead of sitting at the table, they're walking around the house, taking a tour of everything. You get very comfortable. Said of Soloveitchik, so then how are you allowed to do that in a shul? Who said you're allowed to walk up and down the aisles in a shul for no good reason? You come to shul, you sit at the table like you sit at the table in someone's house. What right do you have to walk around? So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik jokingly said, maybe that's part of the miracle, that in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, everyone had the proper kavod, and they actually stood in their places. They weren't walking up and down the aisles in the Beis HaMikdash. Even though there was a lot to look at, they were there for the experience of the Beis HaMikdash. And they weren't taking tours and walking around and being disrespectful to the Beis HaMikdash. So this is the idea that Rav Soloveitchik put forth about explaining why it is that we find some distinctions between a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMikdash with regard to how we act. So again, it's true, there are a number of halachas that are the same. For example, we said about if a person finds money in a Beis HaKnesses, that's the same as a Beis HaMikdash. And we said a few weeks ago that Lo Sasum Kein Lashem Elokeichem, same way you're not allowed to destroy any part of the property of Hegdish, so too you're not allowed to destroy any part of the property of the Beis HaKnesses. And we said a bunch of halachas where this applies to. However, there are some halachas where we find that there is a distinction, there is a differentiation between the halacha, and they're not always going to be parallel, they're not always going to be the same. One final point on this is, Rav Soloveitchik said that perhaps this is also the difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. He said, Shabbos, maybe that's the opportunity that we have for God to come and visit our home. That's where we have Kabbalah Shabbos. We don't find that there's Kabbalah Yom Tov, because Yom Tov we have the mitzvah of Aliyah LeRegel. Yom Tov we have the mitzvah where we visit His home. Shabbos we have the experience where the Ribbono Shel Olam comes into our home, and that's why there are different halachos. On Yom Tov we have a mitzvah of Simcha, whereas on Shabbos there is no mitzvah of Simcha. It's just Kibud and Oneg. You have to enjoy Shabbos just like you have to enjoy Yom Tov, but there's no mitzvah of Simcha. That elevated level of Simcha is not there. Why? Because when I go and visit the president in his home, I'm very excited about it. And that's why on Yom Tov we had that elevated status of Simcha, because we have the opportunity on Yom Tov to visit in the Beis HaMikdash Be'armona Shel HaMelech, whereby on Shabbos we have the experience of the Melech who comes to visit us. So this is something, a little bit of an appreciation between the connection between the Beis HaKnesses and the Beis HaMikdash, what the similarities are, what perhaps the differences are, and